Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Welcome to Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
It's that time of night, you can't stay uptight. So come and join the people and I'm feeling all right. Here on Overnight America. Overnight America.
Oh man, here we are in Overnight America. Let's go ahead and enjoy this last hour together. The only way we know how, by listening to my voice. We know that normally the weekends of holidays are a little bit slower, and I knew this weekend would be a little slow, so I thought I'm gonna put in a couple of things that you may have missed, some good interviews from this week, including one with Chase Purdy, author of Billion Dollar Burger. He wrote this book and talks about the growing industry of those growing meat, if you can call it that, in a lab. So we're going to talk to him about some of the things he found out through all of this. I wanted to point out a few things. Here in the city of St. Louis, we've had some terrible, terrible crime. Last check, 20 shots, 7 murders over the weekend, and that number may actually have rose from the last time I gave an update on that. 4th of July itself, you saw even children getting shot. You see videos online of at a high school, they're playing a ball game, and players hit the deck, and next thing you know, shots ring out. And though the shots were not directed towards the kids, it was in a neighborhood close to it, close enough. And it's sad. We see these sort of things. We see the problems in the city, none of which is getting fixed, and it's been like this for a while. It's not a new occurrence. It's not a new occurrence at all. And it's also a tough spot to be in, because we've had some prosecutors, the circuit attorney here in the city of St. Louis, who also has a very difficult job in front of her, that she decides that, well, making things a little bit more difficult, trying to fix things by not charging people. Wow, what a weird way to fix things around here. And yes, the violent criminals get cycled back on the street, become repeat offenders, and do the exact same things they were doing before. It's a sad state of affairs that we've had in the city of St. Louis over and over and over again. Is there any indication things are going to get better? Probably not. You know what we've seen across the country? We've seen this sort of mob violence, ones where they get misrepresented. And this is something I'm getting a little bit tired of, quite frankly. Every time you see a group of people, everyone automatically assumes peaceful protesters, which we have plenty of cases, which is really not the case at all. I think the de facto peaceful protesters, and to try to label every single protest as a peaceful protest, is not accurate, because there have been many that are not peaceful. And quite frankly, just last weekend in the city of St. Louis, on Saturday night, you saw Catholics going out to the St. Louis statue right in front of the Art Museum in Forest Park to pray. And not only were they confronted by what some people want to think of as peaceful protesters, where they were harassed, shot down, and even physically assaulted, seen on camera doing so. And that's the type of thing that people are up against across the country right now. And the sad thing is, a lot of different governing agencies are giving into it. They're allowing this to happen. They look at it as just part of the natural process when it comes to protesting. And yay, you got to let it happen, right? No, you don't. And Mike Lee took to the Senate floor, and good for him to do this. to talk about this mob violence and what we're seeing across the country. And he had a fantastic speech because in Congress, they wanted to actually denounce some of this going on. But then they wanted to not, let me put it this way. You have certain groups and you have certain people of those groups that are the ones that are predominantly creating the violence when it comes to these parts of protest. But the Democrats, when crafting this, said we need to stop mob violence, including the president. And Mike Lee's like, you got to be kidding me. You got to be kidding me when you try to make and politicize this when it's something we should all be against. So here, take a listen to this.
What's happening here? This is the United States Senate. Just so everyone is clear about the bat guano inspired insanity that we just witnessed. I just proposed a non-binding resolution condemning mob violence, and Senate Democrats objected. I don't know whether to be outraged or embarrassed for them. This isn't even a bill. It's just a statement that says mob violence is bad. That Democrats can't say mob violence is bad without simultaneously taking a jab at the President of the United States? By the way, what about the mayor of Seattle? What about the city council of Minneapolis? What about countless other people who have perpetuated or enabled or facilitated or coddled mob violence across the country? It's one of the reasons why we're not going to engage in this this task of making it a political tit-for-tat. It's not that. People are being shot. Businesses are being looted. Innocent Americans are being attacked and threatened. Lives are being ruined. Communities are burning. Literally burning. So whose side are you on? The resolution was designed to be unifying. It avoided controversial subjects. All it asked of us was basic dignity.
All right, and it goes on, and even more so. What a terrible time. Let's go to Jay real quick before we go to break. Welcome to Overnight America, Jay. Ah, Jay just dropped. That's okay. We're going to get to our guest, and we're going to be talking billion-dollar burger here in a moment. But just Mike Lee is right, and absolutely right. When it's so bad, we've seen, we had Senator Scott bring up a resolution when it comes to certain reform when it comes to policing. And he just talked about all the frustrations of the Pelosi and Schumers of the world getting in there and just refusing to do anything to work on this. And then they go out and they decry, oh, it's the lousy Republicans, blah, 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 blah. I got to say, this is, I don't know if I've ever seen a time where the Democrats have been so crazy that they will, on record, go out there and do one thing, but then they'll go out and say a completely different game and spit a different game to their people, and they're buying it up and they're eating it up. And it is just so insane right now of what we're seeing when it comes to any sort of action in Congress. The fact that we can't even put a statement out condemning mob violence and the Democrats will not allow it unless somehow it takes a jab at Donald Trump is just insane. That's politics. That's the way it is, I guess. And it's another reason why I think Donald Trump will be reelected, because this stuff, it's so insane. Our guest, Chase Purdy, I talked to him a little bit earlier this week, and we did an interview about the growing industry of growing meat. Real fascinating stuff. So he's going to join us next and talk about his book, Billion Dollar Burger, on Overnight America, KMOX. To Overnight America, I'm your host, Ryan Recker, and had a great conversation with an author of a book this week talking about the food industry and what the future of it looks like. The book is called Billion Dollar Burger, Inside Big Tech's Race for the Future of Food. Author Chase Purdy is joining us. Thanks for coming on, Chase. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's an interesting topic because people have been paying attention to it, and I'm curious, and you even have the word billion in your title, and Billion Dollar Burger. I'm wondering how much money there really is in the industries that are growing right now between growing burgers and steaks.
Right. Well, the title of the book is a little bit of a, you know, an exaggeration, but it's to the point it's trying to make, though, is that, you know, there are billionaires who are putting money into this technology, and there's, you know, tons and tons of people with lots of incredible degrees behind their names who are trying to push it to the finish line. But what we're talking about is cell-cultured meat, not mm-hmm. plant-based meat. And in the cell-cultured meat space, there are, you know, well over $100 million in investment from names like Bill Gates, Li Ka-shing in Hong Kong, and even some of the biggest meat companies in the U.S., including Tyson Foods.
Yeah, and I always wonder about that, because one of the headlines today was that Tesla, a company, if you think about them, relatively new, finally has overtaken Toyota when it comes to the most valuable car company. They're doing something new. They're doing something exciting. People like the brand. They like Elon Musk innovating. They like the changes and that sort of thing. So I thought, I wonder how long it will take before one of these companies in the food industry, something a cell-based meat, or what, as you were mentioning, will overtake one of the big meat processing plants like Tyson or something like that. How long do you think it'll be before something like that happens?
You know, I think that if people take to meat alternative foods like cell-cultured meat, you know, it's going to be something that gets phased in over time. The Impossible Burger, which is a plant-based burger that's already out on the market, for instance, it didn't come out, and then suddenly a switch was flipped, and suddenly people just eat Impossible Burger. And I think that that's going to be a similar story for cell-cultured meat, which means that if it does end up having like a sort of a wide impact on the market, it would probably take decades. But that doesn't mean that it can't snap up lots of market share. And in fact, there are, you know, a lot of sort of financial analysts who follow the agricultural space, in particular at Rabobank, that have told me that even, you know, meat alternatives taking 5% of the meat market share would be considered a pretty big disruption.
Hmm. Can you really call it meat, though? So sometimes there's a debate. Even here in Missouri, we had that issue where the way it was being labeled, and this was more plant-based, but they were worried that if you go to the grocery store and they call it meat when it's really not meat, that it would confuse customers. So they wanted to at least be a distinction that it was not what you would find as your traditional meat. So can you call cell-cultured meat meat?
Right. Well, the case that's made by the people, the entrepreneurs, and the scientists especially who are behind this is that yes, you could call it meat, because what, you know, the process for making it, while it is new, it is essentially taking an animal cell and growing that cell into two different things, fat tissue and muscle tissue. You put those two things together and you have what is on a molecular level, on a bio, sort of a chemical level, real meat. And it also happens to be sort of on a nutritional level the same thing as well. Mm-hmm. So the people in this space would say, yeah, absolutely. This meat is sort of a imitator.
Yeah. I'm wondering, too, when it comes to the production of this sort of thing, because I've seen videos online, YouTube videos, mm-hmm. where they're going to trade shows and they're like, here, try this. And they essentially cut off for you, which is the tiniest piece you've ever seen. And I wonder, maybe it's because it's just very difficult of a process and they still don't really have it down pat, so this is the only thing they can do. It's almost like they put it on a little pan and they make it look like they're frying it up and doing these things, but we're talking about something that looks like the size of a postage stamp. So how long before they can actually make something that would be considered a substitute? Because there's no way anyone would look at that and say, I'm going to substitute my burger for something like that.
Sure. Well, they're already making them now. I mean, whenever I'm given, you know, throughout the reporting of the book, I was able to try, you know, a number of different products. I think the last thing I had was, in fact, like a chicken tender, which looks, you know, bigger than the sort of chicken tender you would get from, you know, a McDonald's or a KFC. It was a substantial piece of meat. And how long is it going to be until they can make that at scale to feed thousands and thousands of people? No, that's a few years out, probably. But, you know, if they were to service, for instance, a restaurant or two, that's definitely in the realm of possibility right now. And if you think about it, going back to the way that Impossible Foods, again, a plant-based burger, the way that company rolled its product before it was able to feed literally thousands of people. I mean, it's servicing Burger King's now. When it first started, it started in restaurants, single restaurants, one or two here and there, sort of driving interest and curiosity in people who would want to go out and try it before they would then splash into a new market and do the same thing. So you're right. Whenever you do see these at trade shows, they're definitely sort of that postage stamp sized piece of meat. I've definitely seen that too. But that's changing.
Well, so you said chicken tender. So when you were trying these things, did they tell you how much it cost? What would it be if they were to sell it to you, how much it would cost for something that size?
Sure, yeah. Well, it does depend on the piece of meat that you're holding in your hand. You know, the process for growing beef is different from growing pork. It's different from growing chicken. The last time that I was in a conversation with, these prices change by the month at this point. But I think it was in October 2019, there was sort of a cell culture chicken nugget was about $50 per nugget.
Oh.
a little bit out of price range, probably, definitely out of mine. But, you know, the reason why I think this is interesting, and like you can scoff at the cost of that, but just think 7 years ago, the price per pound of cell cultured meat was about $1.2 million. Mm. That was in 2013. Within 4 years, one of the biggest companies in this space got that price down to $9,000 per pound. So $1.2 million to $9,000, still super expensive. In September 2018, that same company said they'd reduced the price down to $1,000 per pound.
Huh.
And in 2019, an Israeli company, Aleph Farms, told a news crew that they had gotten their beef down to about $100 per pound. So the price is dropping precipitously, and the reason why that's actually interesting is because these scientists have managed to do that in a laboratory setting. But now five companies are building the world's very first cell-cultured meat pilot production facilities, their own production facilities. And it's really when those things are complete and up and running that you're going to be able to see real price drops real fast. So I wouldn't be surprised if you saw sort of price parity meat a lot sooner than maybe that 7 year drop that we've already experienced. I mean, you could see significant drops in a year or two.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Billion Dollar Burger is the name of the book. You can go check it out now with author Chase Purdy, who joins us on KMOX. And part of the trials and the tasting and things like that, people wonder if it tastes the same, is it the same texture? Because I've tried the Impossible Burgers and Whoppers from Burger King. I've also tried different like vegetable-based ones that you'd get in the freezer and then you'd, you know, microwave or whatever up. There's a big difference when you could, like the Whopper, for example, when you put ketchup, mayonnaise, tomato, onion, pickles, special sauce, and a big bun on it, you dress it up in a way, it's very difficult to isolate the taste of the patty itself. So when you kind of like camouflage the patty in there to try to imitate the Whopper. When you eat it just as like a chicken tender, something that you've tried before, what does it taste like and compared to anything else that you've had?
Yeah, that's like, it's a fun thing that you bring up about meat, which is that, I mean, yes, we can sort of season it and to be, you know, to eat on its own. But in a lot of cases, we are dressing up meat. And meat is sort of remarkable and also totally unremarkable on its own. But I agree with you. Like, yeah, we do a lot of work to mask up these sort of high-tech plant-based burger products to try to make them, you know, feel like it's a similar experience as eating the real thing. My experience, and you bring up a good point with the texture. When I had that chicken tender, for instance, the company made sure to not serve it alongside anything else. They had told me we salted it a little bit. We put a little pepper on this. But for the most part, like, I mean, that's it. I mean, it was served to me on a plate. I think there was like a pickle slice on the side if I wanted to eat that after. The first thing I did was I didn't taste it first. I sort of ripped it open with my hands because the insides are super interesting to me. If you think about cutting into a chicken breast, it's actually kind of a stringy interior on the inside. Getting cells to grow in those long sort of linear strands is pretty difficult to do. And so when I pulled apart this chicken tender, I was really impressed because that sort of linear stringiness was inside this tender. It had that same consistency, that same texture. then, of course, I tasted it. And, I mean, I think the book I wrote that, you know, it was a pretty humbling experience. It surprised me. Then again, you can pretty much bread and fry anything, and I'll think it tastes good.
I know.
But this did. But this was a chicken tender. I mean, it felt like a chicken tender. It tasted like a chicken tender on a molecular level. You know, it is a chicken tender. So it was fascinating.
So, yeah, they weren't trying to do the Pepsi challenge like they did in the 90s. So here's two of them. You try both and you tell us which one you like more. It wasn't one of those deals. It was just more. It's like, here, we want you. We're going to hand you a piece of our product. We want you to inspect it, try it, and then you'll have an idea to see for it yourself. You know, your book is called Billion Dollar Burger, Inside Big Tech's Race for the Future of Food, author Chase Purdy. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the benefits of cell-cultured meat, and that you write about some of those too. Do you mind holding on after the break?
Absolutely.
Great. Chase Purdy joins us, author of Billion Dollar Burger. We'll continue next on Overnight America KMOX. He's the author of Billion Dollar Burger. Just came out the last couple of weeks. You can find it on Amazon. Inside Big Tech's Race for the Future of Food, author Chase Purdy. Again, thanks for sticking around and joining us tonight on KMOX.
Totally. Glad to be here.
I think when most consumers talk about food, there's a few things that drive them. Sometimes it's the nutritional value. I think more people are conscious about that. You definitely see trends in food changing because of that. But for the most part, people are also looking at the cost. So I'm wondering, as a consumer, what are those things that draw people to cell-cultured meat? What are those things that they look at as positives, why they would want to change their eating habits, and why they would want to consume something like this as opposed to what would be your traditional livestock meat?
Right. Now, for a while, it's been basically two big cases that have been made for why you would switch over or even just give cell-cultured meat a shot. But recently, a third's been added that makes it far more interesting of a conversation. But the first two are, you know, if you care about animal welfare issues, then this is going to be something that you're just interested in. We kill around the world 65 billion land animals a year to feed our appetite for meat, and somewhere between 1 and 2 trillion fish. That's a lot of animals. So if you're an animal welfare person, you're definitely going to be interested for that reason. It's also a promising tool that could be used to tackle animal agriculture's sort of greenhouse gas emissions issue, which around the world, animal agriculture has been tied to about 14% of the world's total greenhouse gas emissions. That's a lot. And if you care about climate change, then that's going to be a reason why you consider it too. More recently, though, and this is particularly the case in America because this is where you're really seeing a lot of these problems, is COVID-19, which I imagine all of us have heard about at this point. If it's not trapping us in our home, certainly it has for me. And basically what you're seeing is that in meatpacking plants across the country, including, you know, 2 days ago, I think I saw a headline in Missouri. I think Jasper County has a butterball poultry processing plant where, you know, there are hundreds of people tested positive. Many more are quarantined right now. And essentially, you have a handful of meat companies that have consolidated the meat industry so much that only a handful of meatpacking plants put out about 85% of our meat. Well, when something like the virus comes along, the way that these meatpacking plants have been set up, the way that labor works inside of them, it's basically ripe for something like a virus to just go through and wreak havoc. And now there are more than 37,000 meatpacking plant workers who are suffering from COVID-19. And that's an issue, too, that people care about.
You know, and when I think about it, try to give me an idea of what it looks like. So I can understand when it comes to livestock, when it comes to farming, butchering, things like that. In my mind, I can understand how the process goes between the lifespan of the animal to when it's packaged and put into the grocery shelves and then consumed on the end. Kind of give me an idea what it looks like. Is it just a bunch of scientists in white robes with Bunsen burners and Petri dishes and things like that? Is that how this is being grown?
Initially, that was how it was being grown. But now more and more, these are starting to look, the facilities or whatnot that you make cultured meat in begin to look less and less like a laboratory and more like a typical food production facility. Something that doesn't look totally unlike what you would maybe find at a place where you're making Pop-Tarts, or more accurately, probably like a craft brewery, only it looks a little less inviting and probably more, you know, sterile. But yeah, I mean, a lot of this meat is grown in what basically looks like a beer vat. And so, yeah, it doesn't look like something that you would walk into your own home and recognize, but if you toured through, a processed food facility, you'd probably recognize some things.
Yeah, I wonder if it looks like what in the 90s, like a sci-fi movie would look towards the future, like an alien movie or something, where you walk in, you're like, what is going on here? And there's like some goo that's pulsating over on the wall, you know, stuff like that. But, you know, I wanted to ask this at least, and author Chase Purdy joining us of Billion Dollar Burger, which you can go find on Amazon right now. I'm curious, too, about the people that would say, if they were trying to predict the future, they say, you know what, there's going to be a future where livestock will be completely phased out, grown meat, things like this will overtake that industry at some point. Do you foresee that happening?
Personally, no. I think that there will always be a market for sort of conventional animal products, and whether that's like a super premium food or whether it just services 15% of the population, I don't know what that looks like. But I do think that there will always sort of be conventional animal farming, but I kind of maybe see it as being far more localized, far more local agricultural economies, where that meat is just, it's just sort of less, like the demand for it would just be way less.
Yeah, interesting. Now, if people wanted to look up your book or maybe some of the work that you're doing, where can they find you?
Yeah, no. I think that, you could go to your local bookstore, and if you don't have access to one that's open right now, Amazon certainly sells the book, Billion Dollar Burger. I have a newsletter that I write about cell-cultured meat in called Pluripotent, or you can just find me on Twitter. It's just at Chase Purdy.
Oh, very cool. One other question for you. Who do you foresee would be in the market? Like, when the scientists are putting this together, in their mind, who do they see as their customer? What's their target demographic?
Their target demographic is any sort of regular layperson out there. At the end of this book, my mom, actually, where I grew up in Louisville, Kentucky, we both went and tried cultured meat together. And the CEO that sort of we were sitting down with was asking her lots of questions about how does she think this would be received in Louisville? Which, unfair question to ask her to be the representative for the city, but that kind of drives at the what they're thinking about. They don't want to service vegans. They want to feed everybody. That's their goal.
Yeah. Do vegans look at this as a cheating, or are they on board?
It really depends on why someone became vegan, right? Like, if you became vegan because you don't like seeing animal deaths, then this would satisfy all your needs and this meat would be considered vegan. If you're the type of vegan that like is so strict that you won't eat honey because bees were employed in the creation of honey, then this is probably not going to be vegan. So it depends on who you ask. Most people I've talked to who are longtime vegans who have sort of long lost any sort of appetite for meat, they are interested in it, but they're not necessarily enthusiastic about bringing this product that they got over a long time ago back into their lives.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting future for food. Definitely true. And if you want to look into the future, look into the book Billion Dollar Burger, Inside Big Tech's Race for the Future of Food. We have some great neighborhood bookstores. I love the novel Neighbor, by the way, but we got great ones. And of course, on Amazon, you can find it on there too with author Chase Purdy. Thank you so much for joining us tonight on KMOX.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been great.
And he joins us on the TDK Technologies guest line. This is Overnight America, KMOX.
Now back to Overnight America on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
Overnight America, just for a couple more minutes. And how about that? Coming off of the 4th of July weekend. if you're still up or doing what you're doing, hey, I'm glad that, you know, I'm not the only one that is working on the tail end of the holiday weekend. So we got that going for us together. If you'd like Ryan Recker Radio on Facebook to give us a nice like on there. I've been posting other things. I may have something special posted up there on tomorrow. I don't want to break the secret or even the surprise. Just look tomorrow morning, but go like the page tonight so you don't forget. Ryan Recker Radio. A couple things I wanted to get to, and I just wanted to point out here in the city of St. Louis, I wanted to just do a double check. Last time I saw, I think the number was 7 people killed, 20 shot over the weekend in St. Louis. Well, that number is now up to 21 people shot. Still looks like 7 of those victims have, at least last check, died of their injuries, and it could be even higher. 2 children and 2 teens were also shot during the 4th of July weekend. Let me read you a quote from the grandmother. So what happened was the couple was out, 45-year-old woman, 25-year-old man, and the kids were out in the street cleaning up after their fireworks when they heard 6 shots. Grandma said, quote, "I thought it was firecrackers. I heard pow, 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 pow." Police said 2 men began shooting in a nearby alley before fleeing on foot. Just really, really, really terrible. And this isn't a unique thing to St. Louis. It's something that really hasn't found any comfort for people that have been paying attention to the violence. It's something that we can look at and say, well, we do got other problems, sure, but we still have this big one that we need to solve. I mean, we got a lot of issues here in St. Louis. But over and over again, we find that this gun violence, this drug violence, trafficking, all these other things that go on, sad, terrible things go on every weekend, and somehow they go unnoticed. Instead, more people are interested in toppling a statue or going into a private neighborhood and, you know, getting upset because property owners are tired of it and they don't want it coming to their front porch. More concerned about painting the road in front of a police station than they are about the 2 kids and teens that were shot and killed on a weekly basis in St. Louis. You know, I wanted to play a little bit more here from Mike Lee from his Senate speech from last week, and because I thought this was a little bit fitting to what's going on.
It's unbecoming to accuse a colleague of using language that is supremacy simply by reflecting on language in the Declaration of Independence, simply on by reflecting on language that acknowledges the incivility and the intolerability of mob violence. But apparently that's too much to ask today. I guess we should be thankful for clarity, and now we know. We don't have to ask. They told us how they feel about this resolution. You can't really oppose this, it seems to me, without being on the side of the mobs, of mob violence, of mob mentality, of cruelty and intolerance and terror. Now we understand what this resolution is about. I don't think one can oppose this without being comfortable with those things. These mobs are not progressive. These mobs are not enlightened. These mobs are not edgy. They're not hip. They're frauds.
President.
They're
Mr.
dim-witted,
President.
Phony drama addicts, failed by an education system and addled by a social media culture that taught them to be victims instead of citizens. A privileged, self-absorbed crime syndicate with participation trophy graduate degrees, trying to find meaning in empty lives by destroying things that other Americans have spent honest, productive lives building. And today we learned that there are those who are comfortable with this. There are those who are at least not inclined to vote for this resolution, which simply condemns mob violence. Now we know, Mr. President, now we know. And I want all my colleagues to know that when we return from recess, we're coming back to the Senate floor. And we're not just going to be debating non-binding resolutions. It's long past time to expose the shiftless idiocy of the anti-American, anti-science, anti-establishment, anti-constitution mob and remove their snouts from the federal trough.
Ooh, that was Senator Mike Lee. I always liked him. And he's a strong senator that doesn't really put up with it. So good for him to do that. Good for him. That speech actually goes on a little bit further. One other thing that happened. So the president made a speech over near Mount Rushmore, and he actually mentioned St. Louis in that speech. I don't know if you caught this.
We are especially moved to be joined by the family of a great man, fallen officer David Dorn, a 38-year veteran of the St. Louis Police Department, who was killed last month in the city he devoted his life to defending. And to David's great family, I want to thank you very much. The American people will always support the courageous men and women of law enforcement, and nobody, nobody embodies that better than David. Thank you very much.
Good for President Trump to bring that up as part of his speech. And I hope that you guys enjoy the rest of your night. We'll be back again after Cardinals baseball. Join me on Facebook, Ryan Recker Radio. Have a great night.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app. We'll be right back.